This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Good evening. This is your host, Rock Cash, on The People Speak. The People Speak invites audience participation. You can listen by phone calling 760-569-7676, then entering the access code 192919 pound when prompted. Or if you have a computer or a smartphone, you can go to bbsradio.com, navigate to Station 2, and click on the listen icon. You can also participate during the show with call-in questions for our guests, toll-free, United States and Canada, 1-888-429-5471. Tonight, our guests are William Binney and Thomas Drake. They are both former high-ranking officials of the NSA who found out early about NSA's domestic surveillance programs and opposed through proper channels. Binney was a senior cryptographer. He was also NSA's ranking expert in signal externals, much of which now called digital metadata, something you've heard a lot about lately. He designed a breakthrough subsystem that, to his honor, became a critical component of NSA's domestic surveillance system. Binney left the NSA and reported the domestic surveillance to Congress. He was also one of four persons taking a the Defense Department Inspector General to investigate the rampant waste of inefficiency and unethical conduct in NSA's modernization program. Drake helped the IG from inside the NSA after a 2.5-year investigation. All allegations were collaborated, but the findings were kept secret. For these activities on behalf of the citizens and taxpayers, Binney and Drake and three others dearly paid for it. They lost pretty much everything. In 2007, they were raided by the FBI. They investigated them for the 2005 leak on their part, supposedly, of the surveillance program to the New York Times, but they had nothing to do with that leak. The investigation dragged on for years. The clearances were, permanently withdrawn despite their innocence. They lost lucrative incomes. I'm sure they went into a lot of debt. One of them had to go to a public defendant to try his case. Anyways, Drake was indicted on charges that the government knew to be false. He was threatened with 35 years in prison under the Espionage Act. In order to extract a guilty plea, under great pressure, he repeatedly refused to do so. He was accused of processing 5 classified documents, but pretrial hearing showed that the documents in question had been classified retroactively in order to frame him. 4 days before the trial, the government dropped all 10 charges in the indictment, and Drake pled guilty to only a misdemeanor. And this is funny, guys. They charged him with exceeding authorized use of a government computer. After the trial, Drake mounted a public campaign against domestic surveillance, and he was soon joined by Mr. Binney. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. It's a pleasure having you guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Oh, thanks for having
us. With all of this being said and everything that's going on in the media right now and, the Snowden thing, what compelled you guys to do the right thing?
Well, I mean, I think we both devoted most of our lives to defending this country and basically the way of life that we have, which is founded on the Constitution. So we were all, took an oath to defend and protect that Constitution against domestic as well as foreign threats. In fact, the biggest threat we have is domestic, not foreign. I mean, no foreign government can do what we have done to ourselves so far. I mean, this is really getting out of hand. So, but we originally, I think, did it for the reasons that was to defend the Constitution. I mean, that was our primary oath of office.
Right, and that is everybody's primary oath of office when they're, whether you're indoctrinated into the military or you're going into any federal job or any state job, or even as a police officer, you're sworn to defend the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and all of that. And, you know, it's funny that a lot of Americans don't feel the same way that we do, but a lot of these Americans really don't know what's going on, and they don't know what it curtails as far as their personal freedom. Can you please elaborate on what your feelings are on that?
Well, that was a grand experiment that was launched in 1787, ratified by the original 13 colonies in 1789, the grand experiment. It was an idea and how best to govern ourselves. And through thick and thin and lots of ups and downs, it's managed to survive over the past 220-plus years. And yet, right now, the greatest threat to the Constitution and the inalienable rights granted to all human beings and encapsulated in the Bill of Rights is under direct threat from the government. The freedom of association and assembly, the right to redress, the press, as well as the right to be left the F alone from your own government, encapsulated by the Fourth Amendment. I mean, that's our form of governance, and it's been completely turned upside down, in particular, since 9/11, ostensibly to keep us free and to find terrorists. Gone far beyond even the original mandate the government had after 9/11.
Okay, and who was that was speaking? Can you, gentlemen, okay, Thomas, very good. Tom, you know, a lot of people don't realize that there was a lot of things done to us through the Patriot Act, and that would be, of course, attacking the Bill of Rights, and of course, old George Jr., there said the Constitution was just a piece of paper, and a lot of people don't know this, but also the signing of the treaty with Canada to allow foreign troops to come onto our sovereign land. But people tend to fear, and they tend to give up rights when they're in fear, and I presume this has a lot to do with it. Can Tom also elaborate on that?
Well, we've had these periods in history when the nation's been under great stress from both within and without. And there's been great pressure during those periods of stress to move that line over much closer to security and quite a ways distance from liberty. But generally, if you go back in history prior to 9/11, the system does generally tend to correct itself, and it moves it back. That didn't happen after 9/11. And for the last 12 years, what is increasingly the reality is a normalization of a security state, now a surveillance state, and the existential threat and all the fear-mongering goes along with it becomes one of the primary motivators to keeping the security and surveillance in place.
Okay. Well,
and
I see.
And we're losing, as a result of that, the fundamental freedoms and rights are being sacrificed. What I've said more recently, the 99.999% are being held hostage, having their rights and freedoms taken away for the sake of the 0.001%. And that's actually a rather conservative number.
I'm in complete complete and utter agreement with that. But I see this actually starting way before and way prior to the Patriot Act. I see it falling back to the Domestic Terrorist Act, where the government unilaterally took away the right of the people to revolt against the government. In other words, anybody that takes up arms against the government is now considered a domestic terrorist. So they found a loophole of that taking away some of the rights. But also, that was all Slick Willie. Of course, the Waco event and the Ruby Ridge and then again the Oklahoma bombing. This question goes out to Mr. Binney. Giving up your job there at the NSA took a lot of courage on your behalf, and you stood up for the American people. That is a very, very selfless act, and what got you to do it?
Well, it has to do with the way I was raised. You know, I grew up in a small town, and in the small town, you learn that your character is everything, and that's what you are is your character. And when you say something, you mean it, and you do it. And so that was something that I grew up with, and it was only natural to me to do this because it was an oath I took. So. I just couldn't sit there and be a party or associated with such a violation of our constitutional rights. I mean, it was never written in the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act still only deals with foreign. It talks foreign. The secret interpretation is what they're using to do domestic spying on it, but that's not written in the law. Nobody ever wrote that down, and yet they claim it's legal. But that's not there legally. Okay. And for example, if you take the former East Germans who were under the Stasi and all of the spying that went on there, they're very upset about this because they realize what a surveillance state is all about. In fact, there was one I read an article in a newspaper here where one former lieutenant colonel in the East German Stasi was saying that they couldn't even dream of such a surveillance mechanism as we have here. So that tells you the kind of thing that we're going into, that we're becoming. We're angling toward this total surveillance state like a former East German Stasi state.
That's evident at every street corner here, especially if you're in a liberal state like California. It's every intersection has cameras, and cameras on the buildings. Everywhere you go, there's cameras. And it's really becoming a police state, as you say. Here on People Speak, we also allow audience participation. And I have a question for you gentlemen from Anthro in Ohio. First of all, he would like to thank you guys for your courage and willingness to tell the truth. He says we need more folks like you to speak out. Can you help us understand the difference between the position Edward Snowden was in when he strictly whistleblew about Americans to America, and if he crossed the line when he began giving out information to China?
There's no evidence he actually gave direct information to China, and he himself said that he would not provide or disclose anything regarding military targets. He did talk about the NSA activities against civilian targets. So I don't think he crossed any line. The line that's been crossed is by our own government. They're the ones that are running away from justice. They want to be able to get away with the continuing subversion of the Constitution on a vast scale. And so my focus continues to remain on his actual disclosures, not the fact that he happened to be the messenger. Am I concerned about his safety and his well-being? Yes. But he has to escape the United States in order to increase the odds, as challenging as they are, to maintain his own freedom. If he had stayed in the United States, I will tell you, given the fact that I'm exhibit number one, not only would he have probably been detained, he would have been arrested on the spot.
That is absolutely correct. And even if he was arrested, who knows what would happen to him afterwards.
Well, under the NASA Defense Authorization Act, I wouldn't have been surprised if they would have detained him under, you know, secret law and secret evidence, and we wouldn't have heard from him for quite a while.
Right.
Or worse. I mean, you got to remember, the United States government is apoplectic. They want to do everything they can to get their hands on him. I mean, because he's revealing the contours of how bad this Leviathan is.
I think we lost it. Mr. Binney, would you like to take it from there?
Well, when it comes to Snowden, I mean, I thought he initially did an extremely great public service by giving documented evidence of these programs, which were basically spying not only on everyone in the United States, but also everyone who used those different companies, and that's around the world. So. And it's just a massive accumulation of information about individuals, which is fundamentally, first of all, it's a waste of time, space, and energy by the government to do that, because they're looking and collecting data that's totally irrelevant to anything I think they would be concerned about or should be or allege that they are concerned about. You know, so, and I guess the problem really is that they really don't know how to separate out what they really think is important to look at and what isn't. So
what they do, they justify that by taking it all.
Right.
Yeah. It's a matter of competence. You know, are they competent to do the job? And my answer is no.
Well, to me, that would all automatically assimilate that the government is in fear of the people. If the government wasn't in fear of the people and the government was working for the people in a correct manner and following the correct channels and living up to their oath of office to serve the public, then they wouldn't have any reason to fear. So this would tell me that they are not working for the interest of the people, but for the interest of special interests.
And incidentally, we don't want to forget that the initial moves to start spying on everyone in the United States started before 9/11. 9/11 was used as the excuse to accelerate that, but it started even before that, because the CEO of Quest testified or introduced evidence in court that he had been approached by NSA to provide his customer data that was on everybody that was customers of Quest as early as February of 2001. Well, that's 7 months before 9/11. So all along in the plan, it seemed to me that their intent was to gain access to be able to monitor everyone in the United States and what they were doing, who they were doing it with.
Yeah, in addition to that, there was a memo related during the period in which Bush had been elected, but he had not become president during the transition team period, where NSA was looking for ways to get around the restrictions of the Fourth Amendment. So I'm just acknowledging what Bill said, that NSA, well before 9/11, was looking for ways in the Internet digital age to get out from under the restrictions of the Fourth Amendment.
Well, I would think that it would be gone back even further than that. I would think it would have been at 9/11, 1991, when George Bush Sr. announced the New World Order. So I'm guessing that they've been trying to spy in on the public way prior to that also. Otherwise,
the fact remains that we have, Bill Dewell can attest, there's other programs that existed for years, things like Operation Shamrock and Minaret. Shamrock was looking wholesale collection and analysis of telegrams coming in and out of the United States. You had Minaret.
Back to World War II.
Yeah, the decades worth. So it's clear that NSA and the predecessors NSA And, you know, the black chambers, you're going all the way back into the 20s, or looking for ways to gain access to information about citizens in the U.S. without any particularized, search or suspicion, let alone probable cause.
Correct.
And if I could add that we have to remember as our government has been saying things in terms of laws and so on that they in words they sound great, but they have had secret interpretations of these things, and they're using them to justify what they're doing instead of being out and open with the public so we can understand what our government's doing. They've been sneaking and doing it in secret.
Right. If this is truly being done in the public interest, why would they have to hide it? Why would they have to have secret interpretations? Why would they have to have secret law, right, or what I call executive rule? They want to hide this from the public because they're subverting the very Constitution that they took an oath to uphold and defend. They want to keep this off the book, and because they need to keep track. Remember, this surveillance system is in place. It's far more to do with keeping track of people, monitoring people, than anything else.
Right. I have a quick question for you. Do you think any of this this information that's collected by the NSA, do you think that it's secretly also funneled to the United Nations, whether it's intel of gun owners in the United States or who the possible constitutionalists might be, or things of that nature?
Well, I don't really know about the United Nations, but certainly it's being funneled around different agencies of the United States government, including the FBI, as well as it has to be going to Department of Homeland Security, you know, because they've got this word list that they're searching for people using. Well, what are they searching? Well, they're obviously searching emails and Twitter and things like that for these word combinations to get it, which would mean that you'd fall under a veil of suspicion if you use those words. That's the only possible use that they could have for that. Otherwise, you know, they'd have to use the companies to do the monitoring, but the companies aren't really geared for that, but NSA is. So
right.
It looked to me like they were sharing it there. Also, they're sharing it with at least, from what I've read so far in the news, they're at least sharing it with GCHQ, which means it probably might extend to the English-speaking countries, the Five Eyes group, you know, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, the UK, and U.S. So
right.
How much further it goes, I don't know, okay?
Well, that's...
Tell me.
Go ahead.
You get the equivalent of having a persistent digital tap on anybody at any time, anywhere.
Well, then that would also pretty much all be channeled back to one place, because I have a friend that went to work for a company, and he won't tell me much, but he's saying that they're connecting everything together, whether it's fire, police, FBI, military, everything is all being connected through a single radio program to where they can be heard. And it's all being connected to the United Nations, so that's why that question came from me. I have a question from Mike in California, and he's asking, do you guys think that the rumor that Edward Snowden is a plant or a fake and was started by the NSA to discredit Snowden further, or do you guys know him personally by any chance?
I don't know him personally.
I don't know him, so, yep.
Okay.
I don't. Remember, it's very dangerous in the United States to hold up the mirror to secret government conduct, especially when it's involving wrongdoing and illegality, and particularly when it's involving the subversion of the Constitution. And so they have to do everything they can to keep the message on the messenger and away from the message itself.
Okay.
So you'll get all kinds of false flag things being thrown out there from unnamed sources regarding his intentions or his character or who he is, to paint him into a corner where you delegitimize him as a person, and by doing that, you move away from what he actually disclosed.
Correct.
The government does not want, will not answer to the public. You have senior officials, up to and including General Alexander and James Clapper, the Director of National Intelligence, literally perjuring themselves in front of Congress.
Yeah.
But apparently that's not a problem.
They're trying to play the Wizard of Oz. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Yeah, I see that.
You know what I mean?
that's broad. That's in almost every single media situation that's been going on, whether it's the media tarnishing him.
Yep.
Or
that's right.
I see the same thing going on in the Zimmerman case. For some reason, they're tarnishing the victim.
It's called conditioning. We're trying to be conditioned.
It's suggestive reporting and conditioning. Absolutely correct.
Yeah.
We're getting ready to go on a short break here for station identification, of course. When we come back, we'll hopefully have some more questions. Let's go to break. How about that? Once again, we are on a People Speak, and my guests are Mr. Drake and Mr. Binney, both NSA whistleblowers. We'll be right back.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak, every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Hey, we're back on The People Speak. My guests are Mr. Drake and Mr. Binney, both NSA whistleblowers. Welcome back, gentlemen. We have a question for you from Joanna, Missouri, and she's asking if you have any advice for Edward Snowden. Do they think that Russia and the USA may try to exchange Snowden as a Russian spy?
Well, I don't think he said he would do that. There's no way of really telling what's going on because I don't have any information firsthand or any otherwise from it. So President Putin said he would never turn him back over, so I don't think there'll be an exchange. But I think for Snowden, if he just sticks with things that are in the public interest to know, that is, that relate to the U.S., to the population of the United States and what's going on with the United States population, and not talk about what the government is doing in foreign affairs, then I think he would certainly, no one could classify him as a traitor or in any way imply that he was drifting that way.
Well, absolutely. They don't want you telling out the national interest secrets and things of that nature. But it is all about us here, and it is all about the spying on the people. And once again, it's only fear tactics, and I believe that the government is starting to fear the people, and there would be only one reason to fear the people, and that is if you're no longer doing your job that you're supposed to be doing and you're going into a tyrannistical motion. Your take on that, Mr. Drake?
Well, that's anathema to democracy. Our unique form of constitutional republic requires the consent of the governed. And so we have a significant element of what I call a fifth column element within the government who, in the deepest of secrecy, without the permission without the permission of the people, let alone their approval, are doing this in their own name. So you really have a really interesting situation that's developed over the last 12-plus years where if you don't have the consent of the governed and you're governing absent that consent in secret, then what happens to the a government that's supposed to be open and transparent for the people? It disappears.
Correct.
And what we have now, the reality of a surveillance state, a national security state, which I, national security has become the state religion. You do not question it. You do not dissent. You don't hold up a mirror to it, or we're going to hammer you and hammer you good. So you have a total inversion of democracy. It's only a thin veneer. It's in the name of only. The reality of it is that the government has used the acid of secrecy and the blanket of mass security to eat out the heart of our democracy and suffocate openness and transparency for its own end. And the only way that it continues to persist its own ends is to monitor and track the people. And that means there is no individualized suspicion or individualized search. It's simply, we're going to track and record and monitor everybody at all times. You have to remember, I used to fly an RC-135 during the latter years of the Cold War. And the target country in which I became an expert was East Germany. The Stasi, the secret police, became monstrously efficient at having a record, literally a file, of practically everybody in that state. And now the fascist surveillance state. We have the ability now, with the technology, to literally have a digital dossier on just about anybody, and the ability to create it on the click of a mouse.
Well, not only create.
What does that do to democracy? What does it do when you have that much information available to the government in secret, and at any time they decide they want to turn you into a bad person, they decide they want to go after you, or if they did with me, declare you an enemy of the state? What does that give them the power to do? They have it's pernicious power. It's subverting power, and so citizens with rights simply now become subjects of a surveillance state. And that's a different form of government. But then I would argue, as I've argued for a long, long time now, that the government in secret abandoned the Constitution, revoked the Fourth Amendment, and violated the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act on a vast scale. As I've said more recently, we're all foreigners now. There really is no distinction between a U.S. person, U.S. citizen, anybody else, because as far as the surveillance state is concerned, we're treating you all equally. You're all suspicious.
Well, that and the drone killing of American citizens, that scares me even more, because that means they can pretty much target you. They'll say they'll target you out of the United States, but that might also be a go-ahead for them to target you in the United States. And it's also clearly a law that should not even be passed. But the thing is, and this is my take on this, is that it's become a tyrannistical entity to where they don't want to work for you, but they're working for themselves. They're making themselves richer. They're taxing you. They're ripping you off. So now they fear you. And just like any monarchy or anything else would fear their people and fear being overthrown, these people don't want to lose their positions either.
Well, of course not. But to do that, they have to abandon the rule of law. They're not willingly going to let go of their power. I mean, that's the other elephant in the room. There's a lot of money at stake.
That's right.
With the surveillance state, and Bill can weigh in on this in a significant way. We're talking hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars every year.
Yeah, their budget was increased by at something of the order of 50 to 60 billion a year since 2001. So you multiply that out, you know, that's getting up there to close to a trillion.
That just tells me that we need to stop paying taxes. I mean, that's, you know, that's the crazy part of it. I have a question.
That gets to the industrial back behind all of this. All these companies that are living off this money that's being spent on the surveillance state.
Correct.
That's creating so much of a bureaucracy that it has to just keep feeding, and once it gets going, it basically generates its own requirements, you know, just to exist, let alone produce anything. And that's really where the waste is.
That means there's a perverse incentive to persist it, not to get rid of it. There's actually incentive to expand it.
Correct. I have a question from a Tony in North Carolina, and he says, as whistleblowers, what do you believe they have accomplished besides raising public awareness and raising public awareness sufficient, in their opinion, to correct problems? If not, what else do they believe is required?
Well, for my part, I'm attacking it in terms of the Constitution and the law. That's why I signed a sworn affidavit for the EFF lawsuit, Juul versus NSA, where they're actually challenging NSA's constitutional right to collect all of this information on U.S. citizens. Keep in mind that the laws that they're depending on were all done in secret and done by secret court, and that if you examine that Verizon order from the FISA court, it says you basically can't tell anybody and you can't object to this and you have to keep quiet about it. So, you know, that's basically doing everything in secret, even with these companies. But if you look at the law, the FISA law that was passed after the church committees back in the 70s, the FISA law and the FISA court and the intelligence committees, the House and Senate intelligence committees, were created to ensure that the intelligence community and all the agencies in it did not start spying on U.S. citizens like they'd been doing since World War II. And to ensure that it was foreign intelligence that everyone was after, not domestic. And yet, if you look at what they're doing, Feinstein and all of them, they've all signed up to these programs that are advocating domestic spying, but they're not saying that in writing. They're keeping that as the secret interpretations. All of this is illegal and unconstitutional, and that's the place to challenge all of it, in the courts.
Indeed. Well, my thing on that is, I believe that anybody that has Verizon or knows of their cell phone companies actually listening in on them and giving conversations, they need to be sued. They need to sue their companies or buy their way out of, not even buy their way. That's a violation of their contract to give up their privacy.
Yep. So that's why they passed retroactive immunity for all the telecoms. That's why they did that, because they knew it was illegal and a crime, and they had to pass it to protect them and still continue the program.
Okay, Larry in Cincinnati, he says, do you think we are going to see more transparency to this Snowden case, or do you think the government will tighten up and, you know, more controls?
Well, I think they traditionally have only done this is to admit what has been exposed to the public. In other words, what whistleblowers compromise, they admit to.
Okay. Now,
up to that point, and then they don't go any further. In other words, Snowden only really talked about a fragment of the program. I mean, that program of spying on U.S. citizens goes much deeper and in much more sets of information than he's even talked about.
Okay.
I mean, we have maintained that anything that U.S. citizens do electronically is obtainable by NSA and can be incorporated into graphs that can be used to relate to people and their activities and therefore profile you, and you can be laid, your whole life can be laid out by the electronic transactions you're doing.
Right. In other words, they're doing a complete footprint of your entire life, what you said on TV. So even if you're cheating on your wife, in other words, it's blackmail, basically.
Yeah.
It's a basic
blackmail.
See, that's another aspect of it, too.
Okay.
I'm sorry, that's another aspect, too. Is you have to go on trust with these people. That's what they're saying. Trust us. We won't violate you. But it's not just trust the government. It's trust all the government employees, trust all the contractors that are used to maintaining these bases, that they won't go in and, like, for example, do a little bit of industrial espionage against their competitors or anything like that, or somebody going in, like you say, looking to see if their wife's cheating or if their neighbor's wife is cheating. You know, these things are all possible, and with all that kind of knowledge consolidated and accessible by a computer. So there's a lot of trust that we have to have in our government. I simply do not have it at all. I'm sorry. I just don't.
I have no. Given what I experienced, at one point I was threatened with spending the rest of my life in prison if I didn't cooperate with their investigation. I don't trust the government at all, period. I've actually been raising a very interesting privacy exercise with people, and I simply say, think of every aspect of your life, every transaction you've ever made, so every email account you've ever had, all the passwords, all your credit cards, all your bank accounts, medical records, all of it. You take it, you put it into a box. You go across town, you knock on the door of one of your fellow citizens, but a perfect stranger. They open the door, you present them with your box, say, here, I'm giving this to you willingly. Please take care of it for safekeeping. Would you do it? Well, everybody I ask this question, they say, of course not. But then I ask the next question, why not? Because I don't trust them. Then I say, well, you mean you don't trust your fellow citizen? You're a consenting adult. You're willing to give your life to a fellow citizen, your digital life to a fellow citizen, take care of it. And you're not willing to do that because you don't trust them. If
no,
that's true, then why would you let the government do this without your consent in secret and have access to everything about you?
Correct. Anne in New Jersey wants to know if you guys feel that the attacks on 9/11 were accomplished with the help of insiders from within our own government. I don't know why that question is popping up, but go ahead, Mr. Binney.
I don't have any indication that anybody inside the government was in any way involved. So it. I mean, they were involved in terms of being incompetent and, you know, asleep at the wheel, if you will, so that something like that was allowed to happen. I mean, they should have. There is no real excuse for not stopping it. I mean, we were tipped that the two of those perpetrators were coming in from Kuala Lumpur. I mean, the government over there tipped us off to that fact that they were coming in, and yet we didn't effectively pay attention. Well, that was the first in to the entire group, and nobody took it. So, you know, I just thought that they were it was a total failure on everybody's part, and it was just incompetence.
Correct. See, here's my thing. I don't want my neighbor knowing what I'm doing. I don't want, other people knowing what I'm doing. This is my business, this is my privacy, and this is my freedom. Our very, very instinct of freedom is at stake here. And what do you think that we can do to back you guys up and to go forward with taking issues into court?
Freedom is not free. You have to be always vigilant. That's very clear from just the history of humankind. We had a violent American Revolution to prove that point in terms of the formation of our own nation. We need to rescue the Constitution. We need to restore the Fourth Amendment. We actually have to take back what is rightfully ours under the Constitution from our own government. The government cannot hold the Constitution hostage. And they're not exempt from it. And by unchaining themselves from the Constitution, they've opened up Pandora's box. We have to bind them back down with the chains of the Constitution. If we don't do that, in the next few years, I truly fear for the Republic. I really do.
Well, with that being said, they're in violation of their contract,
their contract.
Well, then you have the other reality. Does it matter enough to the citizenry to make the difference? It doesn't take a majority. It only takes, just a very focused small minority. Does it matter enough? That's the one weakness of democracy, no matter what form it takes, even a constitutional republic. If the people don't care enough about their own freedoms and their own rights, then they deserve the government they get. And that's precisely what's happened. The pernicious thing here is that we have our own government has been doing this largely in secret, away from the public. And so much of this was taken away without even our knowledge, except for a few of us who were shouting from the wilderness about what was happening. And yet they attempted to snuff us out by simply blowing the whistle on government criminality and wrongdoing.
Well, as Ben Franklin said, those who are willing to give up a little bit of liberty for a little bit of security deserve neither and will lose both. And it is up to the American people, but the American people are too busy with their toy haulers, they're too busy with the football games, they're too busy with the television. A lot of them are conditioned, as you were saying earlier. They're conditioned through suggestive media and are really in a place of denial. They want to believe it, but they can't believe it due to their suggestive media that they're listening to on a daily basis. What do you think of that?
Well, yeah, I think we in the United States have to start waking up and challenging everything that we're being told, because we're not being told the truth. That's for sure. I mean, we need to be a little more have a little more rigor in our challenge of what people are telling us, and we need to, of course, make it sure that our elected representatives start doing things that we consider are consistent with the Constitution, and not going out and violating those things. It's actually violating their oath of office.
Well, so, we need a clearer oversight of the government.
We also have to put in office people that are willing to support and defend the Constitution in practice, not using it as cover for other activities that go against the Constitution. I mean, one of the factors here, truth is treason and the empire lies, said by George Orwell, and truth is the first casualty in war. So we've had this existential war, ostensibly against terrorism, for the past 12 years, and it's gone through, you know, various guises. So the government has been lying to the public for many, many years. It's habitual. It's become normalized. I mean, you had Clapper saying to Congress when he was challenged, it was the least untruthful thing he could say. What the heck does that mean, the least untruthful?
Well, that was a wittingly made statement.
When you have your own government leaders, both elected and unelected, lying through their teeth, prevaricating, misrepresenting, and dissembling as just the normal course of events, wow, that is the ultimate form of corruption in terms of governance.
What can people do to help support you guys, and how can they help? Can you give our listeners advice on what they should do to help your cause and help move your cause forward?
Well, I think it's collectively our cause. It's the cause for freedom in this country and our Constitution. And what we need to do is start really hammering our representatives. Just call them, write them, email them, do everything you can to make sure that they start paying attention to the rights and freedoms of the individuals and start not, I mean, they cannot put up with the lies that they're being told as well. I mean, the Congress is being told lies, like Clapper did there, but that's the only one example. I mean, I called it bamboozling, technobabble, bamboozling Congress and the administration. But they're all buying into it because there's so much money involved and so much of an industry involved in it that has to be supported. So they're all working together to support that, and they lose the fact that we're losing our constitutional form of government. So we need to get back to the fundamentals of life and freedom. So everybody should at least start hammering their representatives and senators. That's the only way that those people will listen more than anybody in the administration, that's for sure.
I seem to think a little bit differently. I think we're way past that. I don't think that they're going to listen to us. I think that votes can be electronically manipulated. So I don't see that being a big factor. I think maybe something more severe, like just a complete shutdown of the corporation. You know, we make it stop for a full day, and it would, you know, take a full collaboration of the citizenry, and I'm not sure that's going to quite happen. So,
Well, I'm for civil disobedience. I'm also for doing it peacefully, but I am planning, I'm speaking at a Restore the Fourth rally in McPherson Square, Washington, D.C., on the 4th of July, and I am planning on, while I'm there, declaring a new form of independence as part of a new American revolution. So, if you want to hear my opening words, listen to me at the rally.
Well, great. I just hope that they put this on the media during the rally. I doubt that it'll get any coverage, but hopefully it will.
I've dedicated the rest of my life to defending life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That comes right out of the Declaration of Independence. Those inalienable rights that we all have as human beings. I don't know what higher practice and set of ideals exist. Because if you don't have life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, and you let someone else take it away from you, what kind of life is that? I don't want to live that life. That's not the life I took an oath to support and defend.
That's not the oath I took in defense of the Constitution either when I joined the military. We have a caller online. Caller, can you please identify yourself? Okay, sorry, the caller hung up. I think everybody should be in defense of the Constitution, but it seems like every time you talk to people, you know, people just don't want to believe it. They're closed out, or you get labeled as a conspiracy theorist, or things of that nature. They don't want to believe that our government just, I guess they trust the government. And to me, how stupid can you be? Why would you trust an entity that shows that it's not working for the people? And it was evident whether it was working for the corporations with the credit cards and the bankruptcies and everything else. So please elaborate on
that. We're probably seeing one of the largest redistributions of wealth in human history. That the very substance of a nation, the very heart of the nation, is being given to the government and the corporations it's in league with. That's to the tune of trillions and trillions of dollars. A nation cannot survive with that kind of redistribution of wealth. It cannot. And so what's at stake is the very future of what it means to be the United States of America. And, I mean, this, we're facing that reality, and whether or not people care enough, some of us, myself, Bill, and others, were willing to sacrifice our entire careers and our life and our sacred honor to defend the Constitution against all enemies in foreign to domestic. And one of the primary enemies of the Constitution right now is our own U.S. government.
I have an awesome question for you guys. Winston Smith in Vermont, he asks, how will the corrupted court dependent on federal government for their comfortable lifestyles put the NSA and the CIA out of business?
Well, I don't think, I would say it's not a question of putting them out of business. Putting them out of the business of domestic spying, yes. But to get them back to their charter, which is foreign intelligence and foreign detection of foreign threats. You know, not spying on everybody in the world, but spying on organizations and activities that pose a threat to this country. That's supposed to be their job. But by doing this other thing, what they're doing is taking in data on everybody in the world. And when they do their searches to get information to try to analyze it, they get so much more data they can't get through it. That's why they're making themselves dysfunctional by doing that. And in the end, they miss things like the bombers in Boston or the shooter in Fort Hood and so on. I mean, those kinds of things they miss because they don't have the time, given the outputs that they get when they make their queries to analyze data.
And Bill and others,
too much data.
We had this solved. The very best of American innovation had this solved. We never had to go to the dark side. And yet, the government rejected it.
Wow.
That, incidentally, is why they have to build Utah to store all this stuff.
Yeah, pre-crime database.
Okay, I've got some more questions. I've got somebody else. Okay. Anyways, I'm sorry, guys. It's coming to an end. We've gone over our time, and I've really enjoyed talking to you guys on People Speak. Thank you for your patronage. Next week, we have part two of the NSA whistleblowers, Edward Loomis, Kirk Wiebe, and their colleague, Diane Rourke. Join us next week on the People Speak. Gentlemen, Mr. Benny, Mr. Tom, have a good evening.
Tom Drake, that's fine. Yep, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having
us.
Mr. Greg, sorry.
That's all right.
Have a good evening. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people and they stood